Welcome to the Dark Depth Podcast, your go-to place for the modern and legacy formats. I'm one of your hosts, Billy Mitchell, and here with me is the Titan of Nature's Wrath himself, Michael Mapson. How are you?
I'm okay. I'll actually go as far as to say I'm good.
Ooh, wow, good. Yeah. That's nice.
How are you?
Doing okay. I don't know if you heard this last weekend. I was strutting my stuff on the RCQ stage. I went to my first RCQ in like a year. It was pretty fun. Not super good though, but it was a good time. So, you know, pretty much a big deal though. I won my first match and then got dominated the next three, playing Murktide. So, I don't know. It was good. It was good. How about you? Did you do anything fun?
You know, I also played an RCQ.
Oh, cool.
So that was neat.
Nice. That's good. How'd you do?
I am qualified, so.
Oh, so yep. You did better than me. Okay. I feel like I you should have started than then.
Okay. And in a harder field, probably, too, right? Moto RCQ versus versus paper.
Why did you let me go first? This was.
You always go first.
Yeah, I guess so. All right. Well,
you know, age before beauty.
Oh, God. Brutal. All right. Well, congratulations. Yeah, if you didn't hear, Mapson ended up getting second in the Legacy Super Qualifier on, that was on Saturday, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a super solid finish. I think that qualifies you for, you're already qualified for the next upcoming one, which is in Atlanta. And correct. Then this one now qualifies you for, it's not Chicago, is it?
It's Denver.
Denver. Okay.
Chicago's the PT. I wish it just qualified me for the PT. That would be really convenient.
That'd be very nice, yeah.
And, you know, I think this even more now that I have reached the finals of one. But I kind of think, like, at least first and second for these should get a PT invite. Or even if it's just at least first place. Mm-hmm. Just because they're so large. Like, I don't know. You have to win no matter where you play, but it's just like the online events are so large and the average competitor is going to be tougher than the average store. And like the Legacy one wasn't nearly as large as the Modern one. The Modern one was like 550 people. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't imagine being like, yep, I came in fifth out of 550. So I got like $100, which is like,
yeah. Yeah, it feels real messed up. And I know it's a matter of, like, allocation and things like that, but I'd rather just scrap, like, you know, one local for each region and just, like, you know, get more cues from the online. But, you know, they do what they do, and it doesn't seem like it's going to be changing anytime soon, so it's, like, almost not worth arguing about, but like I definitely agree with you though. It feels kind of absurd. Like the event I was at was 41 people and we got two invites, so you know, four times the size of that would still be,
and we got
160.
Yeah, and we had 200 and something and got four invites. Yeah, I don't know. Even if it's just like if they do a size threshold where it's like, hey, we hit a certain cap, like the top two gets the invite. We hit a certain cap, the top four gets the invite. We hit another cap, top eight gets it. Just something. And again, just like, I don't want to sound like I'm bragging, but like Moto PTQs are on average going, or not PTQs, RCQs are going to be on average harder than your in-person ones. Like, yeah. Of course you have stories like, this weekend, LSV won an RCQ, and like that one, you know, maybe that one's a harder one to win, but in general.
Well, I mean, even if that is the one, right? Like, I don't know who else is playing at that RCQ, but pretend it's LSV, Matt Nath, and Gabby, right? Gabby Sparks. So those three are the best players in the room. That is still, you know, compared to, we'll say, Kahara, you, McGuinthaw, Sebastian Palzo, Aaron Relentless, Like, that is still, I think, as good or better when you're trying to look at a
definitely not better.
Well, but it's when you're talking about the size, right? Just like the number of people increasing, even if the difficulty is not as high, just the volume of people, I think, makes it harder to, you know, crack into that top eight.
I can't get behind that.
Yeah. So, what'd you play? I'm assuming it was just Depths. That seems like the go-to for you in Legacy.
So I played Red White Initiative.
Okay. It's a change of pace for you.
Yeah, so I played a league with Green White Friday night into Saturday morning, and I was getting some pretty bad luck. And I know that doesn't affect how things go. Like, you know, one bad league doesn't mean anything in the grand scheme of things. But I was a little annoyed, and I was also supposed to be streaming with Dukes that night. So I was just like, I don't want to just, like, keep being frustrated with this deck and then have to, like, be happy and positive on stream.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I kind of want to play something else. I thought about playing Scam because, you know, general consensus, it's one of, if not the best deck.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's, I do enjoy playing that kind of Magic. I don't like playing with Murktide Regent, which I know I've said on here before, but other than that, you know, I'm totally fine casting Brainstorm, Stasis, Ponders. Like, that's how I started. We'll always, you know, we'll always feel good. But I did think Initiative was really well positioned. I saw a tweet from Sahar. I would say her last name, but I'm not sure how to pronounce it. But Sahar tweeted out, like, she was looking for an Initiative list, and I was like, oh, you know, I think that is actually, like, a good choice right now. And I was like, I went and looked at some recent results. I was like, oh, yeah, sure enough, not like a ton, but a fair amount of Initiative. And just thinking about how it lines up against Scam, Swords to Plowshares is very good in those matchups. So getting additional copies in the form of Solitude. A lot of people I thought would be on these slow mid-ranges, Up the Beanstalk decks,
mm-hmm.
which, huge fan of Up the Beanstalk. Haven't played with it yet. Played against it only once, but I'm already sold. But I thought, you know, Initiative seemed good into that. It seemed good versus Scam. And I felt like most combo you'd see would be Reanimator, where your cards like Chalice and your sideboard Rest in Pieces are really good. So I just kind of thought Initiative would be in a good spot. It's also got a good lands matchup, which has been on the rise. So I was pretty happy with my choice, and it worked out for me. Thankfully, the deck isn't super complicated to play. I will say it has some more decisions than people might think. I definitely made mistakes over the course of the event. Even some simple things like, okay, here's my plan. I'm going to kill them with Trap, which is like the deal 5 damage dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got to my turn, and I was like, well, I don't really want to put 2 counters on my thing. I don't have any good cards in hand. I'll scry 2. And then I was like, oh, no, I can't trap them.
Yeah.
I'm like, that almost cost me. I got bailed out because I'm super lucky, but, like, that was a huge, huge punt. But, yeah, there's definitely room for mistakes, whether it's just that, whether it's messing up the combat math. Like, one of my, it was my quarterfinals match against Lance. Like, I had a spot where I spent, like, 5 minutes doing combat math, and then it was like, oh, God, my clock is, it's like, getting eaten up, like, what is happening. Shadow Spear makes things very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, I was happy to pick it up. I had actually kind of fun playing the deck. I do like getting aggressive from time to time. I was pleasantly surprised at how well it was able to grind. I know that's not something people associate with the deck, but Caves of Chaos Adventurer does a lot of heavy lifting.
Yeah, that card, I've been playing it in CEDH. I've played it in numerous Red Shells. Like, that card is, I think, wildly underrated. It does only have 3 toughness, I guess, initially, but very quickly it gets up to 5. And I think once you start having a 7/5 with trample that also, you know, kind of draws you cards. It does a lot of work very, very quickly, which I appreciate. So I guess we can run through some of your matchups too. I don't know if you want to go through all of them or not, but you did start off the event with Just Guy Control into four color, and then eventually playing our friend XJ in round three. Any highlights from those first couple rounds?
So I don't really remember round one other than it was fast. I won, and I won pretty quick and was like, okay, I hope my whole day goes like this. And then I did some laundry for a bit. Round two was against Andy Wilson, who actually ended up losing in the finals of the Modern Super Qualifier the next day. So shout out and congrats to him. Mentioned possibly working together for Denver.
Cool.
I have gotten beaten up by him the last couple times we played. So I started off the match by being like, please take it easy on me this time. and thankfully he was nice enough to do that. My match against Ashley was pretty fun, pretty good. I drew very well, and I can't remember if it was game two or game three that ended the match, but I drew very well, so that was cool. Drawing well is really good when you're playing Magic tournaments.
Yeah, I for sure. That's like the most broken cheat code. Was XJ on the black-white list? I know they've been playing that a lot.
Yeah, so black-white death and taxes, basically exactly what you would expect. Having access to a lot of removal in the form of Solitudes plus Touch of the Spirit Realm was really good there. Touch of the Spirit Realm was pretty good for me all day, honestly. Just, like, let me put that Solitude. Oh, you've got a huge, like, construct with a Shadow Spear on it? No, you don't. Just stuff like that.
Yeah, and being uncounterable, I think, is just so huge. I've definitely lost a number of games where I'm like, okay, my Murktide can block, and I can get rid of, I can, you know, counter my the swords, and they're like, I'm just going to flicker that. I'm like, ah, well, that's bad. So, yeah, definitely a very good card. So I guess you started off 3-0, then you're heading into rounds 4 through 6, which looks like Abzan, Depth, 8 Cast, and Scam. So any highlights from that?
There is definitely a highlight to it. So Abzan was interesting because I only saw like green-black stuff during game one. Mm-hmm. And then in game two, my opponent just cast a Knight of the Reliquary. I'm just like, where the hell did that come from? and then I realized, I was like, oh, this is not green-black depths like I thought. Thankfully, I think I still won 2-0 anyways. And then we had a really awkward game too because I had like Blood Moon them, but they had Mox Diamonds. It's like, you know, you always have to worry a little bit about them blowing up Blood Moon and just making a Mirage. So, and I was kind of stopped a little bit by my Blood Moon, but not as much as my opponent. And I don't know, it was just a really weird game, but it was fun. And then sometime between round 4 and 5, my dog sat on my laptop power cord and my power cord stopped working. So that's, you know, not what you want to see when you're 4-0 in an event. Mm-hmm. So I'm like trying to figure out what to do. I'm like trying to angle it. I'm like, maybe if I shimmy it around, it'll work. Didn't work. I know my wife has Modo on her laptop, even though she doesn't play Magic. I was like, okay, maybe I can finish from there. It's so old that that it doesn't even update. It just like you try to open it and it just says no. And I was like, okay, well, I'll go online and I'll re-download it. But her laptop is garbage. She doesn't really use it much. She usually uses her work laptop for everything. So even just trying to open the Wizard site to re-download Modo was a huge pain. So I was like, this isn't going to work. So I drove to a friend's house and got there during, like, I got there and was able to win round 5. But that was a little bit of a headache and some stress. So round 5 was 8 cast. And yeah, not too much to say about the match.
Okay.
Did big scary things, attacked for a lot. My opponent, I think, drew pretty poor, which helps.
And that matchup is, I know you were talking about, you know, the moon effects being pretty effective versus the depth deck, but, you know, I guess 8-cast doesn't, you don't really have anything major in your board. I think the Lauren of the Third Path seems to be like that kind of the haymaker for you.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely brought that card in. I don't actually think I ever drew it.
Okay.
Maybe I drew it. I don't know. The matchup felt pretty reasonably fine, though.
And then
round six, I took my first loss to Scam. And I was like, oh, was I wrong? This was the reason I played my deck. But it, you know, didn't quite work out for me. I feel like the games were close, but maybe they weren't. Maybe that's just wishful thinking. But yeah, big scary creatures are big and scary.
Yeah, I mean, for what it's worth, I do think that matchup is in your favor. I've, you know, played that a number of times, and I think there are definitely some sequences where, you know, they grief you, they take your Cave of Chaos Adventurers and just go to town. Like, that does obviously happen. But I think a lot of your cards do line up naturally pretty well against them. So hopefully in the future that's not the same thing you see. But it looks like you end up seeing Scam again pretty soon. Round 7, you've got Mystic Forge combo. Round 8, you've got Scam. So how'd round 7 and 8 go?
So round 7 is actually against, like, one of my very good friends, Mark, who he tends to do very well with Mystic Forge. But, you know, when you meet an unstoppable juggernaut, yeah. I mean, our match was fun because I got to trash talk him in chat, but also because I knew what he was on. So I just got to go turn one Archon on the play game one.
Ugh, growth.
Which is really good against Mystic Forge. And then we both had some missed sequences, but yeah, I mean, I drew a little bit better than he did. I also think the matchup's probably favorite for me. Just having access to Archon is, like, so huge. That he, you know, he does have answers, but he fell a little bit short. And I just had a really quick clock in game 3. In game 2, he just, like, killed me on turn 2. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Round 8, I played Scam again, and it went better for me. I don't remember the specifics of the matchup, but, you know, it was a relief after being like, oh, maybe I messed up. So it was nice to be like, okay, this felt good. And then round 9, going into the round, I was pretty sure that I was live with a loss, but I was really hoping to, like, I was pretty sure I was in either way. I really was hoping to win because I wanted to help Mark's Breakers. Unfortunately, I lost. They were relatively good games, I guess. I don't know. It was really awkward. My opponent played in game 3. My opponent played in Urza Saga, and I had a Magus, and I wasn't planning to play it yet. But I wanted to kill the Saga. I didn't want him to be able to get any constructs off of it.
Okay.
But I was concerned if I played it that they might just make a Mirror Lage and I'd have no answers. But I was like, okay, well, he doesn't actually have, like, the white source to remove the Magus. He doesn't have the Dark Depths. Like, he doesn't have anything yet. Actually, I think he had the Mox Diamond out already, but he had the Crop Rotation and the Swords out of, like, his last 4 cards, and I was like, okay, like, it is what it is. Like, maybe it's definitely possible I was supposed to just wait and let him make a construct, but my hand wasn't, like, well-equipped to beat the construct, so, like, I think playing around what I can visibly see versus, like, the 2 cards that may or may not be in my opponent's hand, I think I made the right play, but, you know, the downside to if I picked wrong is I just lose. Yeah. Versus, like, if I let the construct exist, like, I don't necessarily just lose, even if I'm in a bad spot, but, like, you know, maybe things come together. So it was really awkward, but as it turns out, Mark and I both made top 8 anyways, so no harm, no foul. I got prepared against lands. Again, it was the same opponent, and I was able to pull it out this time, thankfully. This was the round where I said I had really difficult combat math, just trying to figure out, like, my opponent made, like, 388 or 99 construct tokens and got a Shadow Spear on one of them. So just trying to figure out the math was, like, really tough. They also had two Maze of Hits going versus, like, me having a Caves of Chaos Adventurer, a complete dungeon, like, one or two Seasoned Dungeoneers. It was just, like, the board was just so complicated. And it's funny because, you know, I mentioned I had to go to my friend's house to play. So shout out to Jeremy for, like, completely saving me. So he's there, and I'm, like, talking through, like, all the combat. And, you know, he's like, dude, you got to worry about your clock. You got to worry about your clock. And I was like, yeah, I got to focus, got to focus. So he's like, I'm going to leave so it's easier for you to focus. And I, like, start, I tell his Alexa to play me music. And when I play Magic, if I'm playing just for fun, I usually am listening to either R&B or rap. Hip-hop, but like if I'm really, really focusing, I play classical music, and my taste in classical, I like a lot of the sad stuff. So it's funny because he comes back and I can't remember what piece I'm listening to, but it's like a sad piece, and to me, I'm just like completely like in my element. I'm just like, I'm good. And he comes back, he's like, oh, are we I hear the music, are we wallowing in sadness? I'm like, no, like, I was like, I crushed him in game three. So that was really nice. And then I played against Green Black Depths, which I was really excited to see that deck do well. Obviously, longtime listeners will know that I love Green Black Depths. Even newer listeners could probably guess that. Mm-hmm. But I was really excited to see it do well. I completely destroyed them as well. And then I didn't really put that much effort into the finals, lost and went home. But yeah, it was a sick tournament, much better than my Sunday tournament because I copied that Debs deck and did not have the same success as my opponent. I mean, I was happy playing the deck again, but Orcish Bowmasters and Invasion of Ikoria were huge letdowns for me throughout the day. But, you know, congrats to them. Hopefully there's something there because I love that deck. And yeah, so that's how my event went.
Awesome. Yeah, well, congrats. That's, I mean, that's a really solid finish, and that puts you, frees up your Saturdays and, I guess, Sundays for the next couple months, which will be nice.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I could tell, there was only one Sunday RCQ in our area this season, and I did not want to give that store any of my dollars. And you know, I work a fair number of Saturdays, so it's definitely nice to not have to worry about it.
Yeah, yeah, that is very convenient, I feel like. So, yeah, congrats. And I think this was, like, as far as Magic events, Magic weekends were concerned, there was just, like, a lot of kind of innovation going around, a lot of interesting card choices that I know you are a big fan of, including just, like, the uptick of Up the Beanstalk. I'm sure you've seen that deck popping up a lot of places in Modern and in Legacy.
I've seen so many Beanstalk decks. I don't know which ones are good, which ones are bad. Maybe they're all good. Maybe they're all bad. Who knows? I don't know if I'm more... Actually, I do know. I'm more excited about it in Legacy than Modern. But I'm excited about it in both. I think what I've seen it in Modern has been cooler. But all I know is I'm going to be playing a lot of Beanstalks. I've got a Legacy event next Saturday I'm going to. I will probably play Beanstalks in some variety there. Yeah, I'm so excited about this card. Were you excited about it?
I am. I mean, there's a lot of different shells that I was interested in trying out anyways, just because I think the obvious interaction that people were kind of led to initially was the... Incarnations initially, but the Elementals, right? You're getting the Fury and the Solitude, all that fun action, essentially for free, right? Especially since you're drawing a card off of your, let's say, Solitude. Like, now that it's going to exile a card and it's also going to draw you a card. It's really only a minus one card, which is pretty solid. But the thing that I'm actually kind of more excited for was trying to play it with the Delve spells, which I wasn't able to kind of come up with my own shell, and I was working on something that had, like, the Magmatic Vision, or whatever that one is, the five, I think it's five mana Sinkhole, Magmatic Sinkhole, was my first kind of starting point, trying to work on, like a rug list with that in, like, Questing Druid. And, you know, such as the number of Up the Beanstalk lists that I've seen that are, you know, utilizing things that I really didn't think about. Hooting Mandrills for one, Murderous Cut for another one. Like, there's definitely a lot of really interesting builds that I'm really excited to try with the blue core.
I'm upset with myself because I can't remember the name of the person, but there's it's Marco something.
Yeah, Marco Maybe I'll Montani. Find
it
and
put it in the show notes. Has been just like, yeah. Mm-hmm. They've just been posting like decklist after decklist. They're just like 5-0 with this, 5-0 with this, 4-1 with that. And it's just all Beanstalk decks, and I'm so excited about it.
Yeah, this is, and yeah, we definitely will put this in the show notes because I think it's really interesting. This is essentially if you know. You watch, you know, those movies and you have the person scribbling on the walls and they're just, like, writing out the orbit of, the planets and the rotations and, like, how the moon will hit. That's essentially what this is, but just with beans. And the number of decks I've seen from Marco that just look... I want to say, like, not even... I don't want to say bizarre, just they're not what I would have expected, but then you kind of look at the list, you're like, oh, no, that... That makes a lot of sense. The one, I kind of mentioned this before, but it's a rug list playing Hooting Mandrills and Murktide Regent. 6 and 7 drops, and you got your Force of Wills, and they all trigger Bean, you know, and they're 1 or 1/0 or 2 mana to cast those spells. The other one that I thought was, I'm like, there's no way this even works, was the, did you see the one, the blue-green one with Temporal Mastery?
Yep.
Yeah, you got your 4 copies of Up the Beanstalk, 2 copies of Temporal Mastery, a full playset of Submerge. Like, you're just going for blood here. Just
Submerge with Yavimaya to turn it on.
you turn it on for your opponent. I've got you a gift. It's like, it's awfully nice of you. I don't know why. I don't like this. And honestly, like, the Submerge draw card is... I think better than Temporal Mastery, like let you redraw this, you know, Murktide Regent, let you redraw this, you know, Fiend Artisan. Like, that seems very, very rude.
Yeah, it seems sweet. I'm very excited to try some of the list out. Jeff White, aka Pokemoki, has also been doing some brewing. He's got a bug list that looks good to me. Something I like about the bug list is you get to play Orcish Bowmasters. And I feel like I've only said bad things about Orcish Bowmasters on the podcast, but I do like it in blue decks. And so it seems like that's got to come in handy for the mirrors. Mm-hmm. And you also get to play like Witherbloom Command as like another answer for the mirrors while also like fueling your delve stuff. So I'm definitely interested in that. Have you been enjoying any of the modern list?
No, I haven't gotten to play too much modern outside of my RCQ. And I, honestly, for the RCQ, for this is just my own defense, I definitely was just like, oh, let me play this list. Oh, this seems fun. And just, like, played a list off of the interwebs. And the list was fine. I'm definitely not playing it anytime soon, again, at least. But it was definitely fun. The lists that I have been seeing out of modern, though, look... a lot better. I don't know. The 4-color Omnath list, I believe it is. I think it was... No. There was a 4-color Omnath list I was looking that did really, really well recently that is kind of doing what I was expecting people to do. Oh, it's McWin Sauce. Of course it is. You know, playing this, like, high volume of Up the Beanstalks, yes, but, like, playing that with, like, Elishnorn and playing that with Omnath and Solitude, like, you get some real good value when you're doing this. And then you could, like, McWin Sauce's version was really sweet just because you had to play Bring to Light. So, like, if you bring Delight, you trigger the Beanstalk, and then if you go get Elishnorn, you get to trigger Beanstalk again, which is really dope.
Yeah, that's, I was going to bring up his list, because I agree with you, just, like, getting two triggers off of casting Bring Delight seems so, so good. Mm-hmm. Other things I've seen in Modern with it, so I've seen more Commandeers popping up
because,
you know, it triggers it. I've seen people playing Logic Knot again.
Mm-hmm. That's a sweet one.
Which, it's, you know, it's kind of interesting that, like, there's a reason to play a card that's, like, it's literally just worse counterspell.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, there is a valid reason to playing it, so I appreciate that. I've seen Punishing Waterfalls, I think it is, has been playing it in, like, a Cascade Shell.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they're just cascading into it and then still playing playing things like, what is it, Scion of the Ur-Dragon or whatever? No, not Scion.
Scion of Draco.
Scion of Draco, yes. Yeah. So that's cool. There's so much you can do with the card. Something I haven't seen yet is I haven't seen any Yorion decks in Legacy. I know you can't do that in Modern, but I'm still really excited about, like, play Bean, draw a card, play Yorion, trigger, draw a card, flicker Bean, draw a card. Like, that just seems very good to me.
Especially, like, flicker, like, double Bean. Like, it's like, the stupidest thing, but, like, it actually does the thing that I wanted Staff of the Storyteller to do, right? Like, it is, I'm getting this incremental effect. This time I don't have to, like, sink mana into it. I don't have these, like, annoying 1/1s that are there. Like, I feel like without the 1/1s, you're not really getting any value out of that card. Like, I just want to cast 5 drops. I just want to draw the card so I can cast more 5 drops. I don't want to, like, have to go through the middle step of having to pay a white mana, or having to play white in general if I don't want to. Like, the Bean frees you up to do what you want to do. Like, I feel like it's, like, the philosophy of Bean, the mantra of Bean, which I can get behind. I like the idea of being able to stay a little bit more open if the cost is having to play green mana in Modern, where I have Omnath and I've got, you know, cards like that. Like, I'm okay with that. I will manage if that's my the 4 drop I have to play to set up my awesome 5 mana plays.
Yeah. You know what's a pretty big shame? That we'll never know how many issues come up at Eternal Weekend with people escaping Uro and then drawing a card off their beanstalk.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, there was going to be a person.
it's going to happen. I think it's going to happen multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, probably, like, less than 5, but, like, more than once.
Yes. And, like, the funny thing is, too, like, for multiple reasons, like, you're not drawing cards off that. Like, it's only 4 to bring it back, which is 1, but also it is 3 converted mana cost still from the graveyard. But people are still going to try. Guaranteed.
You know, in my head, I was thinking Beanstalk was 4, but you're right. It's definitely 5.
Yeah.
I still think people are going to mess it up, though.
Oh, I 100% think so. Yeah, it's without a doubt. It just seems like it should be big enough. And same thing with the Omnath. Like, and I think that's probably why you thought that, too. It's like, the Omnath you feel like should be big enough to trigger this, and it's not. But, like, you still draw a card off of Omnath because it's Omnath. So I just think people are going to just, like, naturally want to do a bunch of the stuff that, like, does not actually work. And especially, like, you know, if you are, hopefully, I actually really do like the Mikwinsoff Bring to Light tech. Like, I think that's really interesting to be able to pull off, especially, like, you know, just being, still, I think Bring to Light for Valky is still super legit. Like, that has not changed in my mind. That is one of the more powerful things you can do in Modern that obviously has fallen off a huge amount. Like, I don't know the last time I've actually seen Bring to Light getting the Cosmic Imposter, but it's still very powerful and it can very quickly take over a game, especially when you can cast it a little bit earlier, which I don't think this deck has any way to accelerate into Valky outside of, you know, actually, you know, casting Omnap. But I still think having that ability to play the Bring to Light, draw two cards when you cast the Bring to Light, and then the Coughing Imposter, and then suddenly you have a 7-mana Planeswalker, and your grip is back up to almost full. I think like that is really solid.
You know, playing Valky is fine. I think I am more excited about the people who are Bring the Lighting for Time Warp.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I will draw two cards and then take an extra turn. That sounds good to me.
That does sound good. Yeah, big fan. That is that's another one of those cards too, where like I'm constantly impressed. And like, I guess you have the option. I don't know if there's a line here that I'm missing with Eternal Witness. Like, there is an Eternal Witness. There is a Time Warp. I do see some number of Teferis, but I don't know if there's a way to just like get infinite turns here.
Well, if you have Ephemerates, you can make it work.
Mm-hmm. Don't see that in the main, but I'm sure there's something.
I also just think like taking three turns or whatever and drawing two extra cards every time, even just one extra card every time you take your three additional turns, like that should be enough.
that should get you there. Yeah, that's fair.
Like, do you remember like when we used to play? Well, I mean, you are playing a lot of EDH, but. Back in the good old days when we used to play a lot of EDH, and there was that rule, like, if you took more than three turns in a row and you didn't kill the table, you just lost.
Yeah, yeah. Like, we can't sit here all day doing nothing, which I think is probably still a good rule just in general, but yeah, that is definitely one of those things. Like, this deck has enough firepower that the game should end pretty quickly, so you probably don't need that many more turns.
So talking about firepower, I just want to give a brief aside and share something that happened to me this morning. Talking about firepower.
Go ahead.
The 4-mana Aragorn, or Aragorn?
Yeah, yeah. The Uniter, right?
I don't know. But for those who don't know, it's a 4-color card, and whenever you cast a card of like one of the corresponding colors, it's everything but black, you do an effect. So blue is like scry 2, white is you make a token, green is you give a creature +4/+4, and red is deal 3 damage to something, or to target opponent, rather.
Yeah, opponent.
So I played against somebody today, and I was like, okay, they can deal a fair amount of damage to me if they start casting some red spells, but they only have 4 mana, and like they missed a land drop. I think they're pretty capped. This opponent played Bloodbraid Elf, which already, you know, bolts me for 3 and adds 3 to the clock. Cascades into Tribal Flames.
Oh, yeah.
Which then, you know, deals 8 damage to me, essentially. And then they cast a Lightning Bolt that did 6 damage to me. I'm going to talk about firepower. This person just dealt like 16 damage to me in with 4 mana.
Without combat. Just... Naturally,
that's casual. What we call efficient.
Yeah, that is that's one of those cards I also think has a lot of room for just messed up antics. Like, you know, throw a Manamorphos in there. Why not? That seems fun. We'll have a good time.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of interesting lines that potentially with that card. But that is another one, too. I guess if you're starting to look at Delighted Halfling, which I think has started to make a lot of splashes in a lot of different formats. I think more of a splash, at least. That is something that would be really, really interesting. I'm not sure in Modern if you have seen the Yawgmoth decks that have been getting kind of a facelift, mostly because of, I think, the power of Delighted Halfling, but also with that new... what's that? The Cauldron?
Agatha's Soul Cauldron.
God, that card is brutal. I just, like... shout out to my friend. By the way, this RCQ I played 4 rounds against people that I have, like, either have been on this podcast or I have, like, traveled to events with. Like, it wasn't like I was like, random person I haven't met. It's like, no. Hello, friend. Hello, friend. Hello, friend. It was a beating of epic proportions by people that I know. So that was something. But one of our friends, Harley, who was on, I don't even know what episode that was. I want to say like episode 50-something, 56 maybe.
I mean, there's no reason you should know it off the top of your head.
You say that, but like a lot of these episodes stick out. I'm gonna check on the side, but it basically just beat my face in with Agatha Soul Cauldron, and I know we talked about this. I think during the before the set came out, Wilds of Eldraine. But it's a 2 generic mana for a legendary artifact. You may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to activate abilities of creatures you control. Creatures you control with +1/+1 counters on them have all activated abilities of all creatures exiled with Agatha's Soul Cauldron. And you can tap to exile target creature or target card from a graveyard. When a creature card is exiled this way, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control. So, number of things. Especially in this deck, which has so many activated abilities to begin with, including not limited to Dryad Arbor, Delighted Halfling, Haywire Might, Ignoble Hierarch, we've got Dalthy Voidwalker, we have Wall of Roots, we have Yawgmoth, we have Grith the Hungertide, which is a creature in the graveyard. He eventually just went on this, like, sequence where he's activating Grist to make a insect. The insect, he would tap to put a counter on it. He would then activate the insect because it now has a loyalty ability because he exiled a Grist, and then he would make another insect. And we played a couple turns, and I was like, I'm just like not getting out of this. I'm just dying. I'm just gonna die with this. And like, did I have outs? Maybe. I don't know. It honestly got to the point where it's like, I don't see how this game ends in my favor, and I'm just gonna end it here. That card is nutty. I am wildly impressed by Agatha's Soul Cauldron in this deck.
If it makes you feel better, I got revenge for you at Modern last night.
Ooh, that does make me feel better. Slightly. I'm a petty person, yeah. So.
I did not see Agatha's Soul Cauldron. Like, he showed it to me after the match that he was playing it, but he didn't draw it against me. But the card does seem sick. I will say, I answer the judge questions when I'm at the store, and there were so many questions, and too many of them had to do with this card, so I don't like it on principle. Last night I answered more questions than I've ever answered. It was... Like, I've actually, like, worked comp Ariel events where I've answered less questions than I answered in the 3 rounds of Modern last night.
Yeah, it's definitely this set's dress down.
Yeah, well, I had a number of dress down questions as well.
Continues to always be a popular question for people to ask about.
Yep. But yeah, so the card seems sick. I'm excited to see what happens with it. I know people have also been really high on it in Hardened Scales, which seems to be getting a resurgence, which I love. There's definitely some powerful-looking cards for that deck in the set, too. And then, I don't know, Aspiring Spike was playing some nonsense with it on stream, and I'm kind of curious to see if that works out. Like, I know there was Borborygmos involved, and Gristlebrands.
Yeah, I mean, activated abilities are just one of those things that, like, you... I don't want to say you take for granted, but they typically have a very heavy cost associated with them relative to the creature that they're on. Like, I know there is a 8-mana 1/1 that you can pay 1 to make a creature into, I believe, a 7/7. I think it's, like, Gigantomancer. And, obviously, like, you have to put in a 8-drop creature into play. It doesn't matter how you do it. But if you sneak attack, it's only there for a turn, you still have to pay a mana. If you just put that into the graveyard and just say, yeah, just pay 1 and make this a 7/7, like, that's obviously just much better than what you were doing before. And obviously we've seen this too with the Necrotic Ooze, with Phyrexian Devourer and Triskelion, right? Like, that is a common commander combo, or old, I guess, at this point. But, like, you know, that... it's powerful. It works. And if you can get away with it, like, why not just, you know, get these really, really sweet combos? It's just nice, some of these decks that are a little more synergistic, like you mentioned, Hardened Scales. Like, you already, basically, I think the power of that deck anyways was the fact you have all these activated abilities, and it's hard to interact with the Boz, as well as the, what is that card? Arcbound Ravager, and you've got this other activation that you have to deal with from, you know, Patchwork Automaton, that was just hard to deal with because of the ward. Like, there's so many things going on already that, like, you suddenly give Automaton another ability to, on top of that, like, there's just really difficult to navigate as the opponent, but also it just gets you so many ways to get in as the aggressive player. So I can't even imagine trying to deal with, you know, like a Hangerback Walker that can remove its counters to deal one damage to something. Like, that just seems like a nightmare to try to navigate.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. Have you seen other cards popping up?
Wilds of Eldraine, there have been... I'm trying to think if there's any big ones. Like, I've got a CEDH event that I'm prepping for, so I've been seeing a lot of... there's a...
I didn't Eminence actually know that.
The free ad for you, Eminence, just because I like you guys. Eminence is running a bonfire in the Philadelphia area. So that is going to be this weekend. It's on Saturday. The same event. Yeah, same event we played for Punt City and Punt City 2. I'm excited. I'm going to be there. I know like our friend Kai's going to be there. You know, if you're big into the CEDH scene, Lua and Ian will be there as well, which I'm excited about. Lua's amazing, and Ian is some of the best competition for that, for the CEDH scene. So I've got some big games I'm excited to play this weekend. So I've been kind of focusing on in that avenue. So there are definitely some cards that have kind of flown under the radar. The one that I have seen that I'm actually going to test once we're done with this episode, is one for Legacy, that Sleep Cursed Fae. Have you seen that one?
I have, and also now I'm like looking at the set list so I can see what I missed, and we haven't talked about the most obvious one.
Yeah, so if you haven't seen Sleep Cursed Fae, it is a 1-mana 3/3 flyer, which obviously sounds fantastic by itself. Don't worry, there's a downside. It comes into play with, I believe it's 4 sleep counters on it, and the stun counter, is it?
It's 3.
So 3 sleep counters on it.
It's 3.
Stun counters. I keep saying sleep. 3 stun counters, which means it prevents it from untapping. So, but you can pay 2 to untap it if you'd like to. The nice thing about it, though, it does have Ward 2, which I think in Legacy, I think 2 is about the value where, like, that line between this is unkillable, it's not even worth it, just move on, and 3 where it's like, you're never killing this, get on with your life. 2 is that kind of that sweet spot. It is very hard to interact with profitably as the opponent, so there's a lot of really weird sequences you get to do that make other cards a lot better in my mind. For example, I think the Flame of Anor, I think, ends up being a little bit better. The Sleep Cursed Fairy, I believe, is a wizard. Which makes that really good for the flame.
It is.
Which, if you have control of a wizard, you get to choose both 2 modes instead of just 1 of the modes of flame, which I think is a really solid card anyways. I mean, all the modes, the flexibility of Flame of Anor, I think makes it playable. But that helps a lot. In addition, you also do have things like Spell Stutter Sprite in this deck here. This is by, I believe it's Marco Montani as well. This one does not have Up the Beanstalk this time, but there's a lot of like really neat interactions that kind of focus around the Sleep Cursed Fairy. So this is a, you know, I know you're a big blue-red Delver fan from back in the day, so this is kind of a deck that I think is reminiscent of something you might be playing if you were starting back out in, you know, the year 2020.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited, and, you know, seeing people play Spellstutter Sprite with it in the year 2023, it's know, it's got the juices flowing. It does make me want to get out there and cast some red cards.
Which is, like, I think that's great. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's really cool to have cards like this that are... I don't want to say, like, obviously busted. Like, that's a weird way of phrasing it. But it doesn't read as a card that I'm like, oh, this is insane. Like, we have to play this card. It looks like a card that's fine. It's not insane. It's just, like, fine. And I think the more you play it, a lot like... what is that? Theravenger reminds me. Where, like, you read it and you're like, this is... I don't know. And the more you play with it, you're like, oh, this is actually much better than I thought it was going to be. I think that's a really sweet spot for a card being released into a standard set.
So, two more cards that have been showing up. Start with the not obvious one. Elusive Otter. I don't know if you've seen this. It's been showing up in Blue-Red Prowess decks, so that's fun.
I have not seen that, no.
And so, you know, we're both a fan of the Prowess strategies. So for those who might not know it, it is an adventure card. So for X and green, you get to distribute X +1/+1 counters among any number of target creatures you control. And that's not a huge plus, but if you're playing Stomping Ground, it's certainly an option. So it's good to know that it's there. In addition, though, it's a 1-mana 1/1, and it's got prowess, and creatures with power less than its power can't block it. So that's a really good card for the prowess shells, obviously. Just kind of another Swift Spear in a way. It dies a little bit easier, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, I would say so. The other one, kind of reminded me, the Questing Druid was another one, too, that I actually am literally playing that I just forgot existed until you brought up that one. The Questing Druid, for those who don't remember this one, it has an adventure for a red and a generic. It's an instant, which is really nice, which I believe is like Seek the Wilds, I believe it's called. But you get to exile the top two cards of your library, and you can play them until the end of your next turn. So you can still end of turn play it, and then untap and, you know, have access to these two cards. It is basically just a rend resolve. But then you also do have the actual creature, which is a green and a generic for a 1/1, essentially just Aquarian Dryad, right? Play a spell that is white, blue, black or red, and put a +1/+1 counter on it. You know, when you're looking at like any kind of deck that is able to draw cards and able to chain spells together, you know, like something that plays, I don't know, Brainstorm and Ponder and Lightning Bolt, or maybe you're even being spicy and playing something like a Thorin's Ransom, right? Like, it's very easy to chain a number of spells together and get this thing pretty quickly up to a 5/5 or a 6/6. So that is another card I'm really interested in playing a bit more of in Legacy, just because it seems like it has a lot of potential, just being its own kind of pipe man, right? Being able to get spells into exile for you to play.
Yeah, the card seems good. So the other card that I was going to bring up, Beseech the Mirror.
Ugh, yeah, that card is gross. It is not... I was hoping that card would be, like, overrated, and I wouldn't have to deal with it, and I'm just like, no, this card's insane. That is wildly impressive, and, like, you know, we both know the card was going to be good, right? Like, Demonic Tutor plus cast it. I think when you compare it to Dark Petition, right, which was 5 mana, and, you know, if you had the Spellmaster, it only cost, quote-unquote, only cost you 2. But then you still had to cast a spell, right? So that was kind of the downside. But this is kind of the same thing, where it's like, demonic. If you say the Demonic Tutor part is 2, then it's just like double black. You just have to cast a spell if it's 4 or less. Like, and most of the time in Legacy, thankfully, we're casting spells that are four or less. So it just seems like that card goes really hard, really constantly.
Yeah, I have seen so much of this card. Seen a lot of different Storm decks. So I did the bulk of like the watching replays for Sunday's Legacy Challenge for the Data Collection group. And I just watched so many Storm Pilots and so many different lines with this card. It was fun because, like, you know, it's pretty new, so people haven't determined what's the best way. So, you know, most people were playing Gaia's Will, but then it was like, what goes in the shell around it? For those who don't know Gaia's Will, it's from MH2. It never saw play until this weekend, but it's a green Yawgmoth's Will. But zero mana. It's like a suspend-only card. So this was, you know, a lot of people are playing it with that, and then they, like, replay a bunch of artifacts and then kill you with Tendrils, of course. But I've seen people playing, like, Song of Creation. I've seen people playing with Urza Saga, without Urza Saga. So there's definitely room to innovate there. But I also saw it in the Mono Black deck. I played against Bolovo, who is a very good player. And it's Tiago Saporito, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so he was playing like the mono black, like mid range ish combo deck with Leyline of the Void and Helm of Obedience. And it looked really good to me there, right? Because if you're like, Leyline isn't good, then that's something you can sacrifice. But also, you get to have more copies of Helm, that essentially, because you can just tutor for Helm, but you don't have to play like this garbage 4-mana artifact in your deck.
Yeah.
So that seemed really good. He also, you know, being a Leyline deck, he just cast like ill-gotten gains against me and I just lost my hand. So that was pretty brutal.
Gross.
That's not something I've seen other people doing. I don't know if I'm just like ignorant to the fact it's happening or if that's like something that people weren't doing, but that seemed really strong. And I have historically not liked the mono black deck. And I got trounced, and I am very on board with this build now that it gets, like, this card.
Yeah, it definitely does a really good job of tying the room together. Like, I think one of the issues I think you mentioned before with the mono black deck is it just kind of feels like it's, like, disjointed, where, like, there's some, like, stacksy pieces, and there's also this, like, combo thing, but, like, the stacksy pieces don't really go with the combo pieces all the time, and God forbid you have a... you draw, like, a Helm when you really just need, like, a piece of removal or, like, an actual threat. There's a lot of, like, weird disjointed hands, but, like, the mirror smooths that out really, really well, where, you know, you can actually very easily find that part B to the part A you already have and be able to switch gears really, really fluidly. The one deck, and our friend Ethan, with playing this deck with like a blue-black control deck, you know, playing the One Ring and playing Sheoldred in Modern. And I have seen that deck popping up a little bit more looking through deck lists. But the deck does a really good job of, you know, as long as the game goes long, like, I'm going to murder you by just drawing cards with my One Ring and not losing life because of it. That's another deck, too, where, like, you can just sit there and eventually you'll have, you know, an excess token of some sort, usually from the Orcish Bowmaster. But, you know, let's throw away this token. I'm going to go get my Sheoldred. You can deal with that now. And then by the time you deal with that, it's like, well, I've already drawn like four cards and you've lost, you know, six life from your own draw steps. It makes it really easy to kind of construct a plan. And the include a number of cards that are impactful, but not have to play. Like, you want to play the Sheoldred every game, but you don't want to play four. Like, so just play like two and then have, you know, three or four copies of the Beseech the Mirror to be able to find it when you need it. And if you draw the second one, that's unfortunate, but like, more likely than not, you're going to draw the one Beseech, one Shieldred, so maybe Shieldred can, the Beseech can go find the One Ring. Or maybe if you already have the One Ring and you have your Shieldred, maybe you're just going to go and find, you know, we'll say like a Bowmaster or something like that. Like, you have so many powerful cards in a lot of these decks right now that, like, it's really nice to be able to limit the number of them you need to play in your 75.
Another place that I'm interested in trying Beseech the Mirror is, I don't know if you are familiar with the deck builder Matsugan, but mm-mm. Matsugan is, I want to say it's a Japanese pro. It might not be a pro. It's definitely a Japanese player. And he brews these crazy decks. And I mean, he does well with them. So it's not like he's just brewing garbage, right? Like, he's also putting his money where his mouth is, and he's like top eight challenges and whatever with them. He was, I don't know if you remember when there was like a deck built around Hall of the Bandit Lord a long time ago. I know that was like his creation. I can't think of what was, it was a devoted druid with Hall of the Bandit Lord and like Street Wraith and just like super all in. Okay. I know that was one of his. I can't think of what else was his off the top of my head. But anyways, he posted a list for eggs in Modern where you get to play Beseech the Mirror because you obviously have a ton of artifacts to sacrifice, and it lets you get additional copies of Face Reward, in a sense. So now you have eight copies of your 4-mana spell. Whereas like I've played eggs and it was like really close with Open the Folds, but now 4-mana, much cheaper than 6-mana. Granted, triple black harder than double white, but it's worth considering, especially like when you have Lotus Bloom to make the black mana anyways. And the deck also got to pick up Sleight of Hand if that's something you're interested in. So I wanted to terrorize Modern with this yesterday, but I don't actually own Beseeches.
That's fair. Yeah, that is a. I need to pick up a copy, and so the event I'm playing on Saturday is like proxy friendly, which is very exciting. Because I don't own a Mox Diamond, I don't own Underground Sea, but I don't have to own them. I can just proxy them out, and like Underground Sea obviously has very minimal text. Mox Diamond definitely has a little bit more, but it's not the worst. I can write that out. And I saw Beseech, and I was just like, I'm just going to buy it. I know I don't have to, but like, it's just so many words. I'm going to write this out.
Plus, I mean, it's not like you'll never play it again, right? Like, you're probably going to play it in a bunch of different EDH decks. Maybe you end up with a set and play it somewhere in Modern or Legacy. It's not really what I would call a Billy Mitchell-style card, but never know.
Yeah, it's definitely not one that I'm planning on playing too much. Like, I know there are a couple decks that I'm interested in. For those who don't know, we're in the same group chat, which should not surprise anybody, but one of the group chat decks that we talked about was the combo with Witherbloom Apprentice and the good old Chain of Smog. And, you know, just having that card in your list, which I think makes a lot of sense, right? I've seen lists that were before considering playing like transmute spells and things like that in order to find both pieces of the combo, both being at two. And I think it makes a lot more sense just to play Beseech and just be able to like put them into play, especially if you're going to be playing this deck that is, you know, I think, you know, if you want to build it this way, at least, you're playing the 3-mana warlock who makes pests.
Sedgemoor Witch.
There we go. Sedgemoor Witch, yeah. Like, that seems like a natural fit into that deck anyways, if you can make it, you know, kind of grindy and interactive. So play that, and you just have tokens lying around that you are more than happy to sacrifice. Like, it seems like it would be a good fit for that. So I'm interested to see if that deck can end up getting there, if we can find a good version of that.
Well, somebody has been playing that deck to reasonable results lately. I can't think of who it is. There's definitely somebody I would recognize the name of who has been this is gonna bother me. I feel like I don't know if you've felt this way too, but I just feel like lately there's been a lot of cool decks seeing play, just in general, like new cards, old cards. Like Karate Dom is touting Twiddle Storm in Modern, or Twiddle Breach, whatever you want to call it, which I just played my first match with before recording, and I had a delight, at least in game one. In game two and three, my opponent put an Archon into play on turn three, so like less fun, but game one was sick. And like, so that's been doing well, which is sweet. Like, I kind of really like the builds of Titan Shift that have started doing well. Tony Scipone, who we've talked about having on before and has agreed to come on, but we haven't worked out the time, which is totally my fault, has been playing like Paradoxical Outcome in Legacy, and it's just like there's so many cool things happening right now. Like, I'm very excited about Magic right now, and part of that could just be because, you know, had a good event in Columbus, had a good event this weekend, so maybe I'm just like on that winner's high, but I'm like in love with this game right now. I mean, and always, but like especially right now.
Yeah, no, I think I guess to your credit, I think this format is very liberating, I guess, coming off of the place where everyone kind of was 100% confident that Blue-Red Delver was the best deck, and like, it's like, well, what do we do? This is so annoying. Like, I have to keep dealing with this. We got rid of Ragavan, and still we have to deal with this, and you get rid of EI, and I still have to deal with this. And it just, like, slowly has, like, eased into this format where you don't have to play Delver. And, you know, maybe Delver, just straight Blue-Red, is not the best thing you can be doing. If you want to play straight Blue-Red, you can, but Grixis is probably better, but maybe you don't even play Delvers anymore. Maybe you just play Scam. And maybe you don't play Scam, maybe you just play Lands. Like, it just seems like a lot of pressure came off the format to have to beat a particular target, and you just have to be powerful and consistent, and that's it. Which I think is, as far as Legacy is concerned, I think it's a really nice place to be. I think for Modern, I think that obviously is a huge thing too. I think the Scam deck still continues to be, I think, the best deck in Modern. I know the opinion there, but I think the even like things like Amulet have been doing really well lately. And, you know, we're still seeing so much innovation, and, you know, I've seen a number of people really excited about, you know, playing Creativity again, because Murktide Region got knocked down a peg a little bit, and you know, we've been seeing the Mono Black Coffers deck doing well, even though that's not a deck I think is playable. It seems to be putting up results, so I guess I'm slightly wrong, but it's just really nice to see that both of the formats have gone from somewhat narrow over the past 6 months to, you know, you play that. That seems cool, dude. Yeah, try that out. See if you like that one. Which I think is a good place for both of these formats to be.
Yeah, no. I don't know that I agree that Scam's the best deck. I mean, it's certainly a good deck.
What would you say is the best deck, then?
I'm not sure that there is a best deck. I don't know. So, I guess, like, under my head, I would say Scam. But, like, I'm not really sold. I don't know. The best deck thing is like a weird thing, because I guess technically there has to be a best deck, but I feel like it's only worth saying if the best deck is like miles ahead of everything else that's happening. You know, like when when like Blue Red Delver had Ragavan in Legacy, like that was a best deck. To me, Scam is like not a best deck, because like if you like you just have basically just as good of a shot at winning an event if you play Amulet. Like Amulet tore up events this weekend. There were so many Amulet decks in top eights. Between there was like a large event and at face to face between the Modern Super, Modern Challenges, like Amulet tore it up. Four Color also did very well. Rhino seems to be on a bit of a downswing, but has been putting up like really solid results. I think if like it's impossible to know, but if I had to guess based off of the numbers of people playing it, I think Titan Shift had one of the best weekends. Like, I just you know, Scam is the best deck in part because it's also one of the most popular decks. And I also think losing to Scam is often so miserable that it sticks out to people when they lose to it more than when they lose to other things. And like, I know people are like, oh, that wasn't fun or whatever when playing against a lot of things. But in general, they enjoyed, like, when you lose to four color, you might think the end of the game was miserable, but you probably had fun for like the first six turns. When you lose to Scam, you generally stop having fun, like when they make their first move. So like, I think it sticks out a little bit more and is more likely to stick in people's heads as the best deck.
Yeah, I just, yeah, and you're definitely right. Like, I think there are the moniker best, the best deck, I think, is more when a deck is dominating. And I don't think Scam is dominating by any stretch. I think there's a lot of decks that you can construct and play that are reasonable, that have a decent matchup versus it. And I think the blue-red deck is one of them that, like, you know, the Murktide, that you play it and you're like, this is, I don't think this is great for me, but it's not bad. I think it's fine. And even, like, I don't know if you saw Jody Keith ended up winning an RCQ in Baton Rouge.
I did see.
And, yeah. It's, like, mono-white hotness. Like, you know, got four copies of the One Ring, and, like, in case you lose too much life, you've got Martyr of Sands, just in case. You know, and Ranger Captain of Eos, which is a card I think a couple of months ago we talked about, like, this card is way too good to not be seeing any modern play. Skyclave Apparition, Solitudes, and you're even seeing, like, the White Cycler from Lord of the Rings, the Eagles of the North. Like, this is the deck that people, that you were able to play, right? And I keep looking at it, I'm like, there's no way this deck is good. And then I keep thinking about it, I'm like, no, there's no way this deck isn't good. Like, this deck just has to be good. You get the ability to do a lot of these powerful things that other people don't. Like, I think Winds of Abandon is a busted card when you overload it. But even when you don't overload it, it's still pretty good. And I think this is kind of the thing we're looking for when the modern format is able to support decks like this and, you know, not be embarrassed. Like, this is the dream. All right. We should probably start wrapping up. One last thing. So this has been heavy on my mind, and I feel like I need to get this off my chest because I feel like it's absurd in a lot of different ways. And it's embarrassing to say it. I don't want to be that guy, but there's no way Nimble Mongoose is good in Legacy, right? Like, that's just insane.
No, I don't believe that.
Okay, I've been seeing it popping up. People like trying to get the Bowmaster. I'm like, I refuse to believe that Nimble Mongoose is the correct play for you. Like, pick another card. Do something else.
Yeah, like,
it cannot be Nimble Mongoose.
I definitely think there's going to be board states where it's good, but I don't think that's where you want to be. I think people are deluding themselves.
Yeah, I just, like, I keep looking at it. Like, I was literally debating playing a list, but then I'm like, I'm not doing that. That's ridiculous. And, like, for the sake of research, I'm probably going to at some point, but, like, it is very far down my list. I just, like, cannot believe that is a card we should be playing. And it's funny, too, because what, was that 2 weeks ago I did the solo cast and was, like, made the comment about Nimble Mongoose being obsolete. So this now being, you know, getting trophies and Legacy, I'm just like, don't make me do this.
Yeah, don't do that. Friends don't let friends play Nimble Mongoose.
No. But friends do shout out Ali, because I don't know if you saw Ali ended up posting getting a 5-0 with what's that called? Creeping algae or whatever? Spreading algae. He made a comment on the podcast about that when we had him on, and he's playing a list with four spreading algaes in the main deck, and it looks good. It makes sense.
Yeah, he's moved on, though. He's a Storm gamer now.
Okay.
Dead to us.
With four spreading algae with four Ouroborgs in the deck, I think it's so good. So, just want to shout out Ali.
I will say, his Storm deck, I'm curious to see what happens with it. Like, if he works on that as religiously as he works on lands, if it's just going to be, like, a couple week long fling. I'm definitely going to be... I mean, you know me. I'm just always curious about what goes on with decklists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is... It definitely is interesting. Like, the... if you haven't seen this listed, it's playing a lot of the cards you would expect out of the Storm list, right? Like, you have the Beseech, there's Gaia's Will in here. I haven't seen many versions that are playing Baleful Strix, especially as a 4-of. And I also haven't seen many lists that are playing Aspertold, and only a 1-of in this list, but it's still interesting to see that make it. And I'm sure this is probably, at this point, not even the most updated list. This is from yesterday, so I'm sure by now Ali has moved on to something somehow better and more fine-tuned, but I am excited to see where this list goes. All right, let's wrap up. Mapson, where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter at ExpeditionMap. In theory, you can find me on Twitch. I never actually stream, but I'm honestly considering it over the next couple weekends. I'm just very excited about a lot of different decks. I will have some amount of free time just because, you know, can't play in RCQs. So I am considering perhaps trying to stream on some Saturdays upcoming soon if I can get my settings working. Where can people find you?
Well, if you are on Magic Online, you can find me at, Magic Online. But I'm starting in weird places here. If you are looking for me in person, I'm right here. You can find me. No, I'm kidding. I am going to be at Bonfire this weekend. Hopefully we have new tokens. We have more tokens. We should be getting another shipment from the lovely Inkland Customs coming in this week. So if you see me at Bonfire, ask if I have them. You'll get them. And if I don't, I apologize. But hopefully they're there. If you want to find me on Twitter, I'm at Bad Luck Bandit. If you're interested in finding the show, we are at Depth_podcast on Twitter. And we have all of our links and show notes and all that stuff there. So feel free to check us out. And I guess if you are a patron, I wish you the best. I hope you win every die roll this weekend. And I hope that you open Beseech of the Year in your draft. I guess I'll see you next week.
Now. See you next week.
All right. Bye.
Devin Maia taps with green, the scene sees reclaimer. Untap sack of flags, don't go seek the planes. Then tutor up the stage, so pull out your playbill. Darkness podcast starring Billy Mitchell and Michael Mapson on the microphone. Dripping in Mox Diamonds, the collector of curtains up on act one of this magic show. Set in a forest so dense it looks decomposed. With red LaCrevy knights crush against death shadow. On the legendary lake covered in ice and snow. Underneath the surface looks a lonely evil. An avatar so dark it could cause upheaval. The knight lunges forward going for the kill. But death shadow's too tricky, it just won't sit still. Its stubborn denials compile a stack so thick. The bazooka bug emerges with Gurmag's angling. The knight takes a swing at the zombie fishes, but falls submerged for such a distance. Forsaken in the haze of the street wraith's fringes, who wanna stuff her out, they don't sneak forgiveness. Her final breath draws a deafening silence, a sound so sinister no one could describe it. It's like the subtle cracking of a turtle shell, or the surgical extraction of emerging hell. The shards of ice feel a force of vigor, the looming fear releases growing bigger and bigger, until a demon's fingers linger toward the shadow of death. An all-consuming hush, the land goes swept. The night washes up, frozen on the ice. Dryad arbors thaw her out in the green sun's light. An expedition map suddenly unfurls, revealing Merit Lage has rearranged the world.